It is 12 o'clock. We'll call to order the Tarrant County 911 Emergency Assistance District Board of Managers. And with that, I'll refer to the Executive Director for any agenda announcements.
No, sir.
Okay, then we'll move to consent agenda. We have any discussion or a motion on the consent agenda?
Also move for approval.
I'll second.
All right.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Here's a lunch.
Was that an aye when you walked in?
Aye.
Yeah.
Was it minutes?
Yes, sir.
The record clerk, Chief Davis, is here.
Let me help you with that, since I'm up.
I'm having one of those days.
Got it.
You short out Arlington.
Please don't do that.
Oh, that's great. At the record show. Major spillage.
Do you need another one?
I got it.
Of an agenda?
I've got a soft copy.
That is a soft copy.
You got a soft and a soggy. I got this.
We'll wait for Robert to get his message.
Just let the record show we took a vote and didn't let him vote. He took it personally.
Thank you. Somebody had to do it once.
But you didn't get any on you, right?
Oh, I did.
Oh, never mind.
It's okay.
Inevitably, when I have a white shirt on, I'll spill something.
Good, and you?
I was gonna suggest to him that he move over there.
Why not?
He's got the water on this side.
Yep.
Okay, we're ready.
Okay, let's move to item four, presentations.
All right, so the update on the text to 911, we have been testing the full path in the lab as well as the live system. We have some more testing tomorrow. The lab is looking pretty good. We thought it was gonna be just as simple as duplicating the lab onto the real system, the live system, but that did not seem to be the case. So we spent a good 12 hours last week with the four entities, us, Motorola, AT&T, and Comtech, working largely on servers and IP addresses and trying to make sure everything goes to every path and then with the transfer calls and et cetera. So we're still working on the testing. We're hoping in the next week or two, we'll have a thumbs up to do some more testing. Right now we're testing out of just two small PSAPs.
So are the PSAP managers in the loop on this?
Yes, we're testing out of inside the lab.
Okay.
So it's not actually hitting the PSAP. We brought the...
I guess just from a general awareness perspective and communication perspective, are the managers looked in on this?
Yes, by the last PSAP manager meeting, we gave the managers an update, and we also sent out an email.
Okay.
So we're keeping folks in the loop.
Okay.
So we haven't actually gone to a live PSAP yet. Once we're ready for that, we will.
So how will the notification go when we make that decision that we're ready? That's all.
Well, first we'll go test live and pick a couple of PSAPs to test live calls in the actual PSAP, not just in our lab on the live side in our lab. And then once that is complete and we test all the carriers, then we'll go out to the PSAP managers and let them know that the testing is complete, the system is ready to go, and then we'll do a campaign with Commissioner Johnson with the first call.
Okay.
And then we'll do a soft rollout, and then all of the media ads and everything will go out.
Okay. Anybody else?
What is the date still tentatively?
Yeah, timeline.
October-ish?
We're still looking at October for the soft, November 1st for the official.
Okay.
If something changes, we'll definitely let you know.
Thank you.
Okay. Grant program update? It's okay. You got plenty of money to pay for it.
last board meeting, we discussed having a committee to get together and discuss the PSAP assistance program and the allowable expenses. Fortunately, everyone's schedules, we've not had a time to actually sit down and get together. I have sent some emails trying to solicit some information. Aubrey, thank you this morning. I didn't make PowerPoint, but I did get some information back about 9:30 this morning. So the thoughts that you're going to see on here are strictly mine. I haven't had time to talk with the committee, but we can discuss and go from there. So currently, for the past 10 years, we've added just a few things. But the allowable expenses for the assistance program only, not the radio, has been related recording systems, maintenance costs to the recording systems, CAD system upgrades and maintenance costs, fire station alerting software, professional services related to 911. Last year, we added CALEA accreditation. We did have, and this has been in there since the beginning, the initial purchase of an MIS reporting solution. And Aubrey, I did get your message about, do we need that in there? My only question would be if someone ever wanted to get rid of ECATS and go out and buy their own because they didn't like the way ECATS was reporting. They could use grant money, but something we can discuss.
Okay.
911 related contracts. The only thing we will not approve anymore, and this was taken out about a year and a half, 2 years ago, was Critical, because we actually provided to the district for free. There's just one of those things, why should we pay for agencies to have it when we give it to you for free?
Well, let's jump back to that, because we're providing ECATS for free, right?
Yes.
We are.
So why would we allow someone else to go to something else and let them pay for that?
And I left it there, not saying we would, because we have to integrate it with our system. It's just something that we need to talk about more. I just didn't want to delete it altogether. Plus, this is what we currently have. This is what's always been on it.
And the other thing is that ECATS doesn't give all the recording for call center management. And every time someone wants one, it's very expensive. Mm-hmm. So if a PSAP wants something different and it's going to be, they're willing to pay for it, or these PSAP assistants versus us spending an exorbitant amount of money for a small report that may not even be available because they're not always available, then that would be something that we'd be willing to consider.
Okay. Training to include backfill, of course, it needs to be related to 911. APCO, CALEA, NENA, et cetera, T-COL, specialized classes, and potential state mandated classes. Related dispatch furniture and equipment, dispatch center minor remodeling, infrastructure for backup power to include the UPS generator, uniforms, personality assessments, EMD, and then we have limited 911 professional memberships, travel expenses. We added to this one last year because this is what we found out, a lot of agencies can't send anybody because they can't afford the travel. So we added the travel to and from hotel or the conference site on equal or lesser value. Per diem at the DSA rates, and of course the rental car and the ride shares if needed.
Does what about backfill expenses?
That was it, I'm sorry, it said backfill. So we will backfill overtime, but we will not pay their salaries while they go. Just for the people covering while they're gone.
Yep.
Per the statute, chapter 772 of section 117, the allowable operation expense of a district include all costs attributable to designing a 911 system and to all equipment and personnel necessary to establish and operate a public safety answering point and other related answering points that the board considers necessary. Kind of the guidelines of what we can allocate these funds to. And here's some of the things that I came up with. Leave the policy as is. Leave the discussions with the program administrator, currently up to 5,000. Assistance committee up to 25,000, and then anything over comes to the board for a vote. One thing I added this year, there's a lot of times where I see something that either I need to call or track someone down and say, hey, what do you think about this one? Mm-hmm. If there's any questionable request, just send it out as we normally would to the three members on the committee and kind of get their review of that request. Construction request. One of the things I put, and Aubrey, you kind of touched on this as well. Should only be approved for the primary dispatch area, including the back room, backup sites, and then their indoor break or kitchen areas that the dispatchers use in their areas. Something else that I added, start the discussion to phase out ongoing maintenance so the money can be used to smart technology, new technology. The thoughts on this one is we are paying a lot of CAD maintenances for a lot of different CADs. If that's good, and that's a lot of money that we put towards that, if that's the case, then maybe we need to start considering a regionalized CAD system. If we're going to help fund it or fund it for the most part, then maybe we should have something that would work interoperable amongst the district. Training, it should be limited to the telecommunicators, not uniform staff or command staff, unless they are a uniform telecommunicator. But a lot of times we see these come across, and we're paying for chiefs and assistant chiefs to go to conferences that are mostly designated for telecommunicators. And then permission to have the program administrator form a committee, kind of like we have for the RIC, to maybe twice a year talk about policy revisions, allocations, approvals, etc. So when we go into our board meetings every year, we're not scrambling at the last minute to come up with ideas. We can kind of feed you all throughout the year. Here's what we've kind of been doing.
Question. Yeah, before we move up, let's stay on this slide for a second. Go ahead, Robert.
So, on the phase out of ongoing maintenance, what's your exposure versus your timeline towards new technology, right? So if you stop paying maintenance, what's the exposure to your CAD operation in place?
So that is something that I'm thinking long term, if we're going to continue to have these programs. Like I said, this is just something I said, maybe this is something that we need to consider.
Sure.
It would be a long process because, number one, if you wanted to go to a regional CAD, we're going to need to find out who we're going to go with. Who's right. Everyone going to agree to? Can we get everyone to agree to something? How it's going to be funded altogether? Is it going to be charges? There's a lot to it.
Sure.
But my thought was, when I went through every single request, we're dishing out a lot of money for CAD maintenance, but for a bunch of different CADs. You know, that's kind of the big thing we do at the P25. We're paying for the maintenance, but at least they're interoperable that way. With the CAD, you're not. So if we're going to continue to fund that, let's try to work on something that we can be more mesh.
So I kind of flip on that one. I would say running a PSAP, it does involve CAD maintenance. Buying chairs, not necessarily. And so I think we get a conflict. And PSAP operation, for it to function and maintain from its core, clearly maintenance. Two, I wouldn't move into that territory until there was some sort of regional decision that we would move to a singular CAD or a group CAD or whatever like that, because I don't think we're...
No, I'm not saying we're there today.
Yeah, I don't think we cut the legs out from underneath without a solution in its place.
So. Also, when it comes, you know, the chairs is a good point. You know, when you're looking at an agency, I'll use Arlington since we're here for the example, the funding is a lot greater than someone at a smaller Sansa Park. Some of these agencies we go to, they're pretty much sitting on 5 gallon buckets.
Right.
So we kind of, if we didn't help them with that, they would never get a chair.
Yeah, so, but I'm just saying, you can't call a chair a core service when the maintenance of a CAD is the core operational piece of the thing. So
And that's how we're going to have to look at the statute, how you're going to dissect that into what is it really referring
right.
to.
Right.
And when you're looking at future CAD systems, I wouldn't necessarily limit it to just one. I think we could probably have three or four that we know work real well with our infrastructure. We say those are the ones that we support.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, as long as we can get them to communicate, yeah, like I said, right now it's we're pieced together that we can't really, it's still phone, transferring calls via phone.
How many CAD systems are, just curious.
All together?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Different.
I could think probably 10 or 15.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's just more coming on.
I just want to know how many CAD systems will be in our Tarrant County district.
I'd say at least six.
I can get that for you. We did a survey last summer, and everybody told us, but I don't. It's in QuickBase. I would have to look it up.
That would be a logical thing to look at, though, you know, just to investigate it. Okay.
Aubrey kind of sent me some ideas this morning.
Let me stop real quick. The other problem is, all the cities run their CADs differently too, right? You can all have similar, use the same vendor, but operate as a different system. So, complex little exercise here.
I think my first concern, just in initially hearing that, is you've got, like we've talked about, very different size agencies with very different funding abilities. And let's be real, these CAD systems are not cheap. They're not even a small drop in the bucket. They're a significant investment. So I would want us to be mindful that if we were going to try to even pitch the idea of going to a one solution type, one or two solution, that impact could be huge for a city, especially if they just onboarded one particular CAD, you know, and spent a great deal of money to replace that. I mean, maybe that means that if you're not here, this is not what we support, but I'm more leery about that because I know quite a few agencies within the district just purchased brand new CAD systems. Right. And the investment up front is quite a bit for those cities.
So something like that would have to be evolutionary.
Yeah.
You know, over a decade or so to transition to something like that, because you couldn't turn the switch on something like that. And then the other part is all cities have their perspectives of CAD, what it represents to them.
Sure. And how it functions with their other public safety softwares is something to take into consideration too.
Right, absolutely.
I think you have to side with the cities that can't afford the bigger CADs. That would be like, hey, we'll take whatever you want. We just want something.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could think that a group of smaller cities could collectively get on a CAD, mm-hmm. right? They could do that. While
and that was one of my thoughts. I didn't put it on there. Is, you know, we need to consolidate the smaller cities with a CAD system.
Right.
But when you look at the numbers of a lot of stuff that we're paying for, it's like, well, there are options that we could do.
That would tie into our concept of PSAP consolidation. You can see the smaller communities could consolidate, share a CAD, move to something like that. That would be part of our long-term strategic goal.
So, you know, I've been thinking quite a bit about this, and I think your previous slide where you talked about the legislation, at the very end, it talks about as the board sees fit or something like that. I mean, it gives... To me, that is language that gives us a fair amount of discretion to discuss this.
Yeah, and let me clarify that what we're talking about, because I don't have any issues with the topics we're talking about here, but we are actually subject to a different section of the statute, and the language that applies to this board is that allowable operating expenses of a district include all costs attributable to designing and operating a 911 system, and costs for related services that the board considers necessary. I'm fine with that. It's your discretion.
So using that language as the board sees necessary, I think gives us the opportunity necessary. For discussion. And I think a couple things that we should probably be willing to at least talk about, because I agree with you. You know, I'm not sitting here proposing that four CADs January 1, you got to decide. But there should be an opportunity for us to talk about the fact that this grant program is not, I do not see it as I read it and I try to understand the history still as the new guy here, as being a way to, for ongoing funding of day-to-day operations of your centers, of our centers. I believe that we should have a conversation regarding a tiered grant program. What falls into tier one, what falls into tier two, what falls into tier three, with whatever priorities being set annually by the board. If we've got $3 million to spend, then what goes into priority one, what goes into priority two, what goes into priority three? We should talk about a match. You know, if you're in a priority three and you want new chairs, should you be willing to come up with $500 or $400 on a $1,000 chair? And I think those are some things that could help us really put some accountability around it, some sustainability to it. And we as the board on an annual basis can set the priorities if we need to, because we've got certain centers that might have a sunset issue with a CAD. You know, the software, they're really in trouble here and we need to move some priority money around. We have a January whatever meeting in which we set the priorities for the year.
And that's the thought chief behind the committee. Instead of having these conversations last minute, we kind of plan them out throughout the year, present to the board, here's what we're coming up with, and kind of move those along. Like the CAD, it's the perception right now is let's do this by year 2021. No, that's not the perception at all. It was, here's the discussions that we need to continue to have as we're having these programs. And that's what my thought was behind the committee of, hey, 5 years goal, 10-year goal, what do we want to see what we're doing with this funding? Because there's only so many things that we can continue to do by over and over and over with the PSAP assistance money.
And I'm all in favor of having a oversight committee, because there are things, like I expressed in the last board meeting, that if we're talking about sustainability, we're talking about trying to continue the fund, there needs to be some tightening up of what we're actually paying for. And I love having the idea of having any questionable request. There may be a very legitimate request that that PSAP can come and present if they need to the board. That'll be things we can't think of, and everything can't be in black and white. There has to be some discretion, right? But I do think that there is absolutely an urgent need to tighten up what we are going to be approving if we're going to carry this funding forward. Back to the kind of clause that Wayne was mentioning, you know, the health and safety code outlines what we're supposed to be utilizing the funding for. Some of these things maybe, by loose definition, fall in that. But I would like to see us tighten it up to where a lot of these general office things or kitchen things or whatever, it is not directly contributing to the PSAP or to its structure or to the functionality of the PSAP. So that's really my big thing in proposing that change or proposing that committee, is just so we tighten some of these things up so that when push comes to shove and we're trying to decide what we're going to carry forward and what we're not, we have a little bit stricter guidelines, a little more clarity on what's acceptable and what's not.
I would also add to that it gives us an opportunity to, again, I'll use the word prioritize needs for the upcoming year, such
right.
as, you know, again, I'll just, if we have priorities of buckets for funding, I would think that things that are required to keep the CAT up and running and the doors operational are priority
Absolutely.
One, chairs, training, stuff like that, more towards probably a three, right? However, if we all decide next year we want to prioritize training for centers based on text to 911 to make sure that there's not gaps, then we should have that ability to say, we're going to prioritize that this year, you know? I mean, I'll be very honest with you. I'm almost embarrassed that a couple months ago, the city of Fort Worth brought forward a UPS request. They had 5 years to know that thing was coming. And I, you know, I'm like, why are you bringing this to me as an emergency? This is not acceptable to me. And I would think that this board would hold me accountable for that and say, why is this an emergency now? You know, you need $150,000 for that UPS. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and so I think we need to look at that a little bit broader.
To Aubrey's point, though, I've talked to Travis many a time about, is this really authorized? Because I struggle with approving some of these things because it seemed a little far out there, but technically it met the definition, and we've got to tighten up the definition.
Right.
I think rule one is our definitions are too loose, and we've got to tighten those up because we're approving some things that I, quite frankly, don't think we need to be approving.
Me too.
So
I think really if it just goes back to, you know, the spirit of what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is, with that funding, is provide the PSAPs a means to advance in technology or build the resources that they need, whether it be in the primary PSAP or backup PSAP, to do their job, do it effectively, and have the tools and resources to serve, really. That's what it all should be coming back to. So for me, a lot of these things where you're seeing outdoor areas and equipment and stuff, in my mind, that doesn't align with the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish. So.
Right. So to your point, text 911, CADs need to be able to adjust to that.
Right.
Right? That's a real thing. But maybe an ice maker in a kitchen, not so much.
Right.
You know. So those are the kinds of things we need to look at and just evaluate where we're at, we are on those issues. Sorry.
No, I'll say if we could, because we could probably talk about this as a meeting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
We have a committee. So Chief and Aubrey, could you guys have something to me maybe by the end of this week? And we'll kind of start dissecting this and get a little bit more.
Have something back to you regarding what? What's the specific?
The definitions that you'd like to see for the approved purchase. Of what are we willing to fund? What are we not willing to fund?
I'll send you what I kind of sent him today, too.
Okay. To start.
So we can start. Yes, sir.
Because, you know, we're coming around. I'd like to have the policy drawn up here pretty quick.
That's okay. Don't rush it. We want some thoughtful, because we don't want to backtrack on this either. So,
I mean, is it worth it at this point to talk about surveying the centers to see? I mean, I guess it's a little bit different conversation if 98% of them are like, oh my God, we are like horribly dependent upon this compared to
right.
And there are two, there are
30% that are like, well, and there's going to be centers that are totally dependent upon it. And I think that's the problem, right? There's centers that are just, and again, not trying to force the conversation of consolidation, but there's centers that cannot afford to keep operating as a single entity without support of a place like this. Mm-hmm. So do they, should they? Whole different conversation, I realize that. But there's others that might use it for certain things. They might have some opinion.
We still need to balance the political equation to this too.
Okay.
So I think a survey's
that's why I'm asking about the target,
but I think at the same time we could tighten up what the allowable expenditures are at the same time. But I think we should take our time to really understand it, because I think to your point, particularly some small jurisdictions I know particularly are not solely dependent, but very
largely
dependent. Mm-hmm. So we want to be careful to not to make decisions.
Craft a survey for this group's approval as well.
I think that if we just review like the 10-year payouts, what we have been historically paying for, it'll tell you what they're depending on this assistance for. I see a lot of it, and I understand why they're relying on some of these trainings and the travel, and that's a necessity for a lot of agencies just for that professional development, and that's something that we want to continue doing. I think if you ask them, they're probably going to tell you some of the same things. This is what we're using it for, and here's why. So maybe taking a deeper look, a deeper dive into those 10-year, 5-year payouts, and then crafting some type of survey based on that.
For like 2022?
Do what?
The survey for my 2022 budget?
Mm-hmm. To see, I think right now, in my opinion, we could make some tweaks to this for the 2021 budget easily without impacting the centers. You know, we're not talking about cutting out CAD maintenance or those big chunks of things that they rely on, the operational expenditures. We're talking about fine-tuning some things that may bring a tertiary value to their first responders in 911, but not hindering them from getting the job done. So perhaps we'll have some time to mill over this as a committee, and then maybe for that next fiscal year, putting
out
this.
So as a board, do we have a collective consensus on that? Everybody agree with that?
I have a question. Everybody know what the RIC is?
Radio Interoperability Committee?
At its core, it's a group of 10 to 12 representatives from around the district who come together to talk about interoperability issues. So if we did do what you recommended, Chief, we're going to get a lot of the input from the user community as to what they're relying on.
Is in terms of the radio, in terms of the P25?
No, I'm talking about
the PSAP as well.
The PSAP.
We should, yeah. If we do a survey, we should get that. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we have general consensus. What Aubrey just said, I feel very good. You articulated it very well. Anybody have a difference of opinion with that?
Good job, Aubrey.
Okay.
Just to clarify, can I start a committee for the 2022 process have some dispatchers or managers from all size agencies to get the collective? It would be the same as a survey or just someone to kind of meet and discuss face to face.
Sure.
Yep. Okay. I would agree. That's all I have.
All right.
Thank you so much, Travis. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move to section 5A, wireline fees resolution.
Okay, so since our last board meeting or two, a lot of our board members, the commissioner's court, have met myself, the media, we've talked and reached out to a lot of folks explaining the necessity for improved funding for the district. And the consensus was that we got approval to go ahead and increase the wireline business side of the funding. Included in that...
we're all on page 15.
Included in that ask, if you turn to the budget that was submitted in the package, you will notice that it is designed differently per the request of both the commissioner's court and city manager. We broke out the budget into two separate budgets, an operating budget and a capital budget. And then we created a five-year funding projection. So that's the main difference you're going to see with the budget, with the changes based on those conversations. Based on those conversations for Chief Carlson, the fees that the board will be approving this today. We'll be keeping the residential lines at 20 cents, increasing the business lines to 175, and the business trucks to 250.
So we have any discussion?
Shannara, remind me off the top of my head, I can't remember, what was the previous business line and business trunk rate?
46 and 74.
Thank you.
And what would be the argument for leaving residential lines the same?
We've had significant input on that issue, and it was determined that that was the appropriate thing to do, so we're staying at 20 cents. Also, collectively, you would say that many of your poor or fixed income folks would be subject to the 20 cent residential line issue. So, determined that was not something we wanted to address at this time.
So, I think this only works if we're willing to look at this annually. I'm not saying increase it annually, but we have to have this as an agenda item every amount of time.
I think there's consensus that an annual review of this is appropriate, and we should evaluate if it's a around.
That is how it's always reviewed annually.
But I think in our discussions, that was also a commitment too that we reaffirmed that we would do that. Wayne, do you have something to share?
I'm just going to reiterate that the statute does specifically say that in connection with the budget, you're supposed to consider the fees to see what revenues they bring for purposes of setting your budget. So, yes, annually this should be on your agenda at budget time to reconsider. And Shannara, the budget documents you have in the packet here would reflect this increase, right?
That's correct. So the package that you guys have now reflects the increase based on the potential expectation that beginning February, following the 90-day advisement and the 2 months to collect, we will begin to see the funding.
So after this resolution, we'll send a notice to the carriers, and then this will not go into effect until 90 days of the date of this resolution.
We'll give them the 90 days notice to start collecting the revised fee if the board adopts it today, and that's when it will go into effect after the 91st day.
So I'm going to ask for a bit of guidance here from you, Wayne, on the resolution issue. Assuming we'll pass this by vote and then confirm it by signing the resolution, and then we'll send the appropriate notices to the carriers.
Correct? Right. And then we would need to, we don't have it posted today to adopt a revised budget that reflects these new rates. So I talked to Shannara about this. We ought to do, we can do a very quick remote meeting to have the board approve the revised budget if you're in favor of this resolution today, but we ought to have this board formally approve the budget that reflects the fees that are in this resolution, because the previous budget that you adopted was based on the old fees.
Right. And do we have a targeted date for that?
Thursday. Yes,
so
we'll reach out to the four board members needed to see what the best time is. It shouldn't take more than 5 minutes.
And I'll be unavailable, and I'll ask Mr. Brunson to administer the meeting. Okay, so we move forward.
Good question.
Yes, sir.
When we notify the carriers that we're changing the rate, could, as part of their confirmation back to us, could they list the billing elements where they actually changed the rate?
So are you referring to like VoIP, how they reflect VoIP?
Most all of them. Because I did do an audit of the county's telephone bills.
Yeah, I was going to have us talk to Robert about that afterwards.
There's a couple of big traffic areas where we're not paying fees. Don't know if they're doing it like Spectrum and just hiding them someplace, or I think as we go forward, as we do part of our analysis each year, we ought to know how much is in each bucket, what's growing, what's shrinking.
I agree. I mean, we have that based on what they submit, but what you're saying is to try to have them do some version of evaluation of how they're labeling their fees.
Yes.
Because we get that with every bill. It tells us residential, business, truck, VoIP. That's how we were able to break out what effect the change of the fees are. But you're looking for more of an evaluation
I'd like to be able to see it on the bill.
User. Yeah, what does it look like on the bill to the end user?
What are you looking for, though, exactly? I mean, what would be the definitive breakouts?
911 fee.
Okay, I thought you said by product type, though, no?
Well,
or
that
by
is
line type?
You've got residential lines, you've got business lines, you've got business trunks, you've got voice over IP trunks, which oftentimes are just reflected as data circuits.
That's what they are.
But if they're carrying voice traffic and they're making 911 calls, that puts them in the same category as cell phones. And if you want to complete a call to 911, you ought to have to pay for that infrastructure. At least that's my perspective.
I'm not sure I would agree with that, but in the business realm, which is what I'm most familiar with, our customers have a couple of voice type products for sure. BVoIP, what we call voice over IP type products. We have customers that are straight internet type, no voice. We don't supply the voice. Now, that doesn't mean they couldn't use an internet type for voice using Skype or whatever, right? But we would never know that traffic. So that's one of the challenges where we sell specific voice products to customers, but then there's customers that just buy a straight internet pipe or a data pipe. And how they utilize it, we're not always cognizant of that because it's a straight pipe.
And that's why I think it's an industry issue. Not any different than the cell phones. When we put that charge on them in the late 90s. Make a call to 911, you got to be helping with supporting for that infrastructure.
We can certainly evaluate that. But I'm going to ask the board for a motion on this issue. On the wireline fee resolution, we have a motion for this.
So moved.
Do you have a second?
I'll second.
So under discussion, Shinari, these rate increases put us more in the middle, higher middle? Where does this put this in relation to other similar size counties around the state?
We're about even. I have to verify from the list that I provided when we sat down and talked about this.
Yeah, I don't have it here to reference.
I did have that information, and it puts us in a moderate level.
Right. Okay, yes. that's all I'm asking. I want to make sure we didn't go from here to here.
No, we're still lower than many of our peers.
Would you like the numbers?
No.
I just wanted to make sure.
I was just going to give them to you just for...
Sure.
No, so go ahead.
For everybody. Okay. So the averages when she compiled before on residential compared to our peers were 73 cents on residential. Business was $1.82 and trunking was $2.15.
$2.15. Yes. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Yes, sir.
I'll abstain.
Can I get a clarification? So we want this fee to go into effect on the 91st day after we can get notice to all the service providers, or do you want to set a specific date for it to go into effect?
I think the 91st day.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
That's what will happen as soon as the district staff can get the notices out, that will dictate the effective date of this.
Okay. Okay.
So we're looking at January-ish, February-ish?
Depends on the notification.
Right, whenever that gets done.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
I'll abstain.
Robert abstains. Motion carries. We'll move to the next item, which is the resolution, legislative resolution, I guess.
Correct. also, as has been brought to the board by myself and Mr. Paxton, the Alliance of District Executives working with the legislative team for the 911 Emergency Communication District are attempting to get some legislation presented by the next legislative session in the 87th, starting in January 2021, to see if we can increase the wireless piece. As was discussed a couple meetings ago and reiterated with Bill, we're looking at three different options of fees where a district can opt in. We also have a discussion of maybe a flat fee, so we're going to offer the vendors three different options as well as the legislatures to see which one gets the most favorable nod. If that were to go through, that would help us tremendously in our next generation efforts in 911. So the board has decided, the board members had requested that we put together a resolution saying that they would support that effort, and so this resolution is reflective of that.
Thank you. Any discussion from the board? We have a motion for approval of the resolution.
Move approval.
Have a second?
I'll second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion carries.
Get her done.
Sorry? Motion carries. Okay. Okay, then we'll move to Section 6, Strategic Plan Update.
I included this largely to Chief Davis. He had requested a strategic plan, one that I had developed in October 2018 and presented to the board. I will give you some time to read over it and look at where we are with each, but I did want to get that in your hands, Chief, because you had asked for it. And then in October, we'll be updating this. It will be 2 years since we initiated this, and then we can give you not only where we are with that plan, but where we're going for.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's move to item B, system. Let's talk about VESTA.
Okay. So on October the 24th of 2020, that was a Monday, as well as, August the 24th, as well as August the 28th of 2020, our Arlington PSAP experienced two system freezes in the evening. Of course, it was the evening. And we had calls that were reflected in the HUD, their display, as well as some that were in the queue that were not presented to the call takers. And that was the first indication of an issue. Actually, our team immediately got involved, as well as AT&T Resolution Center and the Motorola Center, to try to figure out what was going on. After doing several tests, going back and forth between our team, the network team, and AT&T Motorola, they sent us a training service bulletin and said, put this in place and everything will be fixed. Well, the training service bulletin talked about a system that we don't have. It was an older version of VESTA. It did not have the same dynamic AC to user monitoring delay that was reflected. So on Tuesday evening, we sent this back and said, what you sent us doesn't meet what we're seeing. So explain to us how this is going to fix what we're seeing, because we don't have this. So Wednesday, we still hadn't received anything back. We got a call on Thursday and says, I know that that's what you're seeing, but we think that that's going to fix it. And we said, look, we're not going to just change something because you say it's going to change it when it doesn't match what we're seeing. Friday night, same issue occurred. Resolution team couldn't tell us anything more, but you really need to do this. So we said, okay, fine. Friday night, we did it. The training service bulletin not only describes a version of VESTA that we don't have, but it also came out in December of 2018, so almost 2 years ago. Fort Worth and Arlington are on a pure ACD system, whereas Irving has kind of a hybrid one. So Irving was not affected, but Arlington was, and Fort Worth could have been. So that was also part of our hesitation. Not only didn't this match what we had, but we've been up and running for 2 years and no issue. So, but we went ahead and did it, and then we found out later that the training service bulletin was poorly written. The way it was written, it did not encompass all of VESTA 911 like it should have. And it did not indicate that once you upgraded to version 2, if you'd already upgraded to version 2, you had to go back into the system and make a fix. It indicated if you were on version 2, this wasn't a problem. So the training bulletin, and by the way, we never got this. So this was given to us once Arlington went down. So that is what caused the situation, and I talked to the chief and Rhonda and explained to them what happened. And we went ahead and fixed Fort Worth, so so you're fine. We went ahead and applied the same fix to Fort Worth, and that should have taken care of that. So it was cut. Basically, it was an ACD monitoring delay that should have been 300 seconds of a cycle, and I believe it was, what, 30?
I think it was 30.
Yeah.
Zero.
So that is what happened. We have still not been able to get information from the research and development team as to why it didn't affect anything for 2 years, why it didn't affect Fort Worth on the same exact design system. They have not been able to explain that. But we do know that the situation has not occurred since then, so we feel fairly confident that had this been written correctly and given to us, we could have avoided it. So as I explained to the chief, we sat down with several of the VPs and we said to them, from here on out, you will give us every service bulletin and allow us to decide whether it's going to affect us or not. And they concur. Because basically what happens, because we're not a direct customer of Motorola, AT&T is, they don't give them to us. They give them to AT&T, and then AT&T decides whether it affects us. So when AT&T read this, they said, oh, it doesn't affect y'all, and kept going. Well, what AT&T didn't know, of course, was that Motorola did not write this correctly. And so, yes, it did affect us. And we should have been able to get this 2 years ago and fix the problem. So
for me, a scary thing happened because Fort Worth had gone down with us.
And that's our backups.
Our backups were in trouble.
Is that what happened with MedStar about that same period of time? There was something recently with them as well, right?
MedStar may have been probably right?
Sorry?
MedStar, was that Colleyville related?
MedStar.
Yeah, something happened with them as well.
Well, we had a planned maintenance, but that was not, they were not affected by this. And Arlington and Fort Worth are on two different systems by design, so.
Right. Okay.
But we back each other up, it's the problem.
And if it's not in all those two systems, you're designed the same, so technically what happened in Arlington should have happened in Fort Worth, but we can't figure out why. One, why it didn't happen in Fort Worth, and why it took almost 2 years from this bulletin before it actually reflected itself.
Robert, do you have anything?
I don't. Were you with Dave Jordan's team, or what team were you meeting with internally on AT&T?
On AT&T is Dave Jordan.
Dave Jordan's team.
We've got Marty, we've got, I mean.
I'll reach out to them and just make sure, because I hate to say it, they didn't notify me.
Yeah. So. Right now it's in Motorola's lap as to why.
Yeah.
What triggered this? Because we want to make sure that this fix is the legit fix.
So you're still looking for what's the trigger, for all of this?
Okay.
I'll reach out to Dave.
Ron, did you have anything else you think would be helpful with this conversation?
No, not for those 2 days. I mean, we did have the instance on the 5th, which hasn't been explained either.
Okay.
September.
But it just tells me that at a moment in time that we may have a system design flaw too, that something like this could capture two of the cities, and if we weren't backed up a different way, you know, that we probably need to be backed up a different way. And so, frightening, and I'm glad you guys worked down to it, find out that it was a memo that AT&T was holding back, and I think if we could get a written agreement that codifies that they are obligated to make sure those things are passed on to us, I think that would be an appropriate thing versus just taking the word of an individual who may not be there next year, that kind of thing. Get that in some sort of contractual or agreement method. That was a scary thing, I think, for all of us. And
I'll have to reach out to AT&T because, again, we are not Motorola's customer. They are, and so.
I'll talk to Dave and them and see. It shouldn't be an issue, but here's one of the concerns. So if you get every bulletin, like this one was poorly written, right? If you I guess then at that point it becomes your all's decision whether or not you want to execute on that bulletin, right? And unfortunately, you may or may not make the same decision as the AT&T Resolution Center that manages all the 911 in the country. So if that's one of the things we always push back on the manufacturers in a big way, is we've got to make sure that we've got consistency in their documentation for sure. There's no real way to audit that until you typically see an event. And from our Resolution Center, when we see, because we manage and monitor so many centers around the country, we try to build correlations. Okay, we see this event, so where do we have similar platforms that look like that event? And then is there a bulletin associated to it? And then we broadcast those out to the appropriate centers that have equivalency to those events. And that's a challenge when Motorola's got a poorly written document that impacts everybody. So giving you every bulletin, and I would say I'm comfortable with that team over there evaluating those bulletins. So you all have a very strong 911 internal team, but that outlier still could be there. You may make the decision not to execute on a bulletin that maybe we have deep input on.
Do you have a suggestion then?
No, it's a tricky thing. I'm all for customers who have strong, I deal with a lot of CIOs around the country, and or in my territory, I should say, and I like them having insight into everything. At least it creates enough question where maybe if your team has a question, they can sit down with the resolution team and say, you know, let's have some discussion about, we're not comfortable instituting this either. Should we or should we not? Have there been other events? And you have that availability through Dave Jordan's team to do that. So for me, it's a second set of eyes on the issue, whether or not you execute on it. And if you don't and the problem happens, it's, you know, you put the best minds on the problem you could. Why it doesn't occur in one area and another, there could be some nuance in their system setup that's different than the system setup here that just causes it never to happen. Right.
But whether or not you execute on it, there's a situational awareness that occurs,
sure,
that if it does, right, happen, you're not in the evening going, you can refer,
yeah, because it
back
always
to
happens.
That, right?
Usually,
yeah,
thunderstorms and evenings,
yeah,
is my reality.
and the thing
is, well taken.
As Robert said, Chief, we would not just randomly just do something.
Sure.
We would,
sure,
look at it. We would, right, analyze our system. As you said, we do have a core, strong team on network side, CP, yeah, side. And then we would reach out to the Marvies.
More eyes on it for me is more practical.
Yeah,
but at least we have an opportunity to make a decision rather than not know about something at
and
all.
I think that's the point, is the missing a memo for 2 years is a...
Yeah, on an old version.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's a kicker. Because everybody says, oh, they've leaped forward so much and now this is no longer pertinent. And
you didn't get the memo?
Yeah, software is always fun. Right? That's one of the challenges
we
deal with.
If we could do this, we could at least tighten down, get an assurance that it will happen in writing from AT&T, that they'll pass it on.
I'll work with Robert to see what we can get.
Okay.
We'll need to pull in Dave's team.
So. All right, let's move to Section 7 briefings. Bill, hiding out.
Good afternoon. I don't have much to add on the wireless funding legislation other than to say we're working to try to get feedback from legislative leadership on their appetite for the three bills. As soon as we have their feedback, we'll certainly share that with you. The other thing I wanted to mention is, since our last meeting, Senator Pat Fallon has moved up to Congress. There's a special election right now for Senate District 30. That's his district. It's a really weird district in that there's portions of it in Denton County and Collin County, and then it stretches all the way over to Wise County, Archer County, and out in parts of West Texas. There are currently 5 Republicans in that race and 1 Democrat. It's a very Republican-leaning district, so it's going to be one of the 5 that win this. Probably the 3 biggest names are Drew Springer. He's a state representative. He's the current chair of agriculture in the House. The city of Denton's mayor, Chris Watts, is also another big name in that race. And then finally, Shelley Luther. You probably remember that name. She is the hair salon owner who was arrested for opening and all that stuff. She has been making a lot of waves in that race. And just as recently as Friday, reporters down in Austin figured out that she had received $1 million campaign loan from a Midland oil and gas guy who is the chairman of Empower Texans. And I've briefed you guys on Empower Texans before. So that election day is a week from tomorrow. Early voting is going on right now. It's one we're really watching to see who replaces Senator Fallon. But other than that, it's still very quiet in Austin. The leadership is still trying to figure out exactly, from a practical standpoint, what this session is going to be, as far as actually access into the Capitol, how these committee hearings are going to go, what they're going to take up on the floor, and so forth. But other than that, it's been fairly quiet.
Okay. Quiet's good.
Yes.
Anybody else for Bill? Thank you, Bill. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Okay, so with that, we're going to go ahead and move into executive session. I've got one item for executive, and I think we have another item for executive. So we'll move into executive session based on Section 551.071, 551.074, and Sections 418.183 of Texas Disaster Act. So we'll move into executive this time.
Somebody needs her.
Yeah.
Okay, now you're good.
Okay, it's 1:20. We're out of executive session. We're back in open session. We're moving to Section 10, public comments. Seeing no public comments.
Whoa.
Do we have a public comment? Go ahead.
I have a question. Do you have an idea about when we'll meet on Thursday?
No, I was going to ask you guys what's best for you guys. I was thinking maybe first thing in the morning when everybody meets.
I am busy all morning that morning, just me personally. The afternoon works better for me if that works for.
I would prefer early or late afternoon.
Totally out all day.
Vacation?
No, police chief interviews.
Oh. I can do first thing in the morning or late afternoon.
4 o'clock?
I can do 4 o'clock.
Anybody can't do 4 o'clock?
I'm good with 4.
I'll be fine.
Okay.
And that'll be
remote.
So we got
4 then.
Correct.
Yeah. Of course, you'll notice Brian.
Yes, we'll include all of everybody.
Yeah, so you may have more. But
Yeah,
theoretically, a 5-minute meeting, just formal approval of the budget to reflect the fees that you adopted today.
Okay. Anybody else? So our next board meeting is October 19th, besides this short impromptu meeting.
Sure.
With that, we'll stand adjourned. Thank you.